I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into another episode of The Memo for this Wednesday, April the 20th, 2016. Brad Locke here with you, along with Leslie Chris, not Derek Russell. He's on assignment today, but Leslie filling in. Leslie, the living editor for the journal. Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. Leslie, the living editor, as opposed to the dead editor.
That's always, yes. It's always a much better title to have, living editor.
I think so.
Yeah. I'm online editor, which is better than offline editor.
That's true.
But you've had to help with obits from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I have. I have often worked with the dead folks. So. Yeah.
You run the whole gamut?
I do.
And Leslie has co-hosted before, haven't you? Yeah.
I have once, I think.
Okay. So this is your second time. So ratings will go up.
Yeah. We said that Derek was going to be gone after the 100th episode.
He's gone.
He's not really gone. I saw him out in the newsroom.
No, he's gone from the show.
No, he's done. He got replaced. So it's going to be a rotation of you, Emma, and Lauren now with me.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's girls rule.
That's what we need. Pretty much. We need that balance, that female voice.
Too much testosterone around this place anyway.
It seriously is.
There is.
That's what all the focus groups have said.
The focus groups.
Were there women in the focus groups? Must have been.
Probably.
Yeah.
They couldn't reveal to me the identity.
Like, we're not listening to your podcast unless you get a woman on there more often, okay? That's the deal. Yeah, we listen. So, sorry, Derek. You're done here.
All right. Can I give him the word?
Sure, why not?
Fired.
You're his immediate superior. I don't see why not.
Okay. I'll be happy to.
Yeah.
In my Trump-like voice.
You're fired.
Your Trump-like voice.
Speaking of voices, I don't know if the listeners can kind of tell a difference in Brad's voice now that he doesn't have a mustache anymore.
I don't think there is a difference
in the inflection.
I think it might have muffled a little bit. There was so much. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had to readjust your levels on here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You look so much less smarmy.
Less smarmy. That's right. Yeah, that's the word you used when I grew that out.
It's one of my favorite words.
Smarmy. That's a good word. Well, guess what? It's coming back temporarily next week for like a day.
Derek's going to be so excited. Rachel's going to be
quickly.
So excited.
Well, we're filming the play.
Yeah,
but y'all just shave the... It probably won't be as thick and lush as before. Or if the director's like, whatever, keep your beard, I'll keep the beard. We'll see.
It's all up to the director.
It is, ultimately.
By the way, if anyone wants to see a video of Brad getting shaved...
Oh, yeah, we put that on the Facebook page.
Check that out on our Facebook page, on Daily Journal's YouTube page. There's a link to it in the show notes.
Is there?
I think you did a... What was it? You did a Periscope on your Twitter.
I did a Periscope, which is only available for like 24 hours.
Okay, so that's gone. We did a Facebook Live video. I don't know if that stays up on the Daily Journal's Facebook. So there's a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, if that's something you really want to see.
Right.
Did you do it yourself or did your wife do it?
My wife. Derek started it and my wife finished it. It could be cathartic for those traumatized by my mustache to see it come off. I don't know. Anyway, I've had a lot of people tell me that I look much nicer now.
You
including
do.
My children. And my wife, obviously. She hated it. We got a good show today. We got Dennis Sid coming on to talk about the Retro Lounge coming to Tupelo. We got William Moore going to talk about a topic that you don't hear a lot about, female sex offenders. He had a story earlier this week on that. And food, it's Wednesday, we'll have food with Jenna Parsons. And so that's going to be a good show. And Leslie, thanks for co-hosting.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get to it. Let's welcome in Dennis Sid, business editor of the journal. Hello,
good.
Dennis.
Hello. Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Great. I need to go get my dancing shoes, apparently.
Yes. And for those of us who can't dance a lick, dance lessons will be available.
Yeah,
for
I
free.
Can't dance either. You had a story on Sunday, was it?
Right. About the Retro Lounge.
Retro Lounge coming to Tupelo on North Spring Street. Joe Haynes. People might know the name because he owns the Greatest Hits Music and Books and the clothing shop Love Me Do over there at the corner of West Jackson and Gloucester across from Romy's. And so Joe's now doing this because, hey, he wanted somewhere to dance. So
he wants a place to dance. He's tired, and a lot of his friends are tired of having to go to Memphis or over to Florence or Muscle Shoals, I should say, to do their dancing. So he's opening this place up to let the spirits flow and dance and all that good stuff.
Nice. And it's going to be located in the building that I know at one time housed the Todd's Deli.
Just called Todd's Downtown Deli is probably the most. It's been several businesses, but right. Most people will identify with that location. You know, around the corner from the courthouse.
Right, right.
Down on Spring there.
Okay.
So who's going to teach the dance lessons? Joe?
No, Joe's gonna get somebody. I can't remember who he said, but somebody here in town.
Okay.
So. Yeah, Joe's a pretty busy man, it seems like.
Yeah, he's got a few things up his sleeve.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
He's he's worked hard on the place. He's built everything that's inside of it. Looks good. He gave us the grand tour. He's stringing up lights and now it's he's gonna go with a playlist that he's been working on for a couple three years, and it's music you can dance to. So it'll run the gamut from the 50s to today. A little bit of country, a little bit of rock and roll.
A little Sir Mix-a-Lot in there, maybe?
Possibly.
And Justin Timberlake.
Know. NWA, yeah. Maybe.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see.
He said it'll probably skew to a little bit older crowd.
Yeah, it's not.
And Joe's an older guy, but if you want to dance, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's what he says. You know, just get out there and pretend you know what you're doing and just go with the flow.
Yeah. He mentioned that the people used to have a lot of places like this. I don't know. And apparently not really any now, at least maybe not any that you'd want to catch yourself
in. Yeah, a lot
in.
Of places, will have music, live music. You know, Blue Canoe,
right.
Good example there. And, Steel's Dive, but not really, an area or a place where big enough for people to dance. He just wants people to come out and dance. And, he'll be serving food because he has to, not necessarily because he wants to. But one of those laws you have to.
Yeah, if you serve drink, you got to serve food, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
Apparently, it's important if you have a dance place to have a floor, a dance floor.
Yes, indeed.
Like a proper dance floor, not just like a floor, a dance floor.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know. I guess.
Being one that dances, who knows? Who doesn't dance, who knows?
Yeah, I don't dance either, usually. I did dance a little bit at the Mustache Bash, but I don't think there's any video evidence of that, so I won't admit to it again. Chris, what?
I thought Leslie was going to say, apparently it's important if you're going to have a place to dance to serve alcohol.
Well, I'll tell you what, if I'm going to dance, I'm going to have a little alcohol in me. That's the only way you're going to get me out there.
Myself
included. That's about it for me, too, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. When's it supposed to open again?
First week of May, because it'll be open Wednesday through Saturday.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. 1st of May. So that's it's next week, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Or the week after.
Week after.
Week after. Yeah. Going to be open Wednesdays and Thursdays from 6 to midnight, Fridays and Saturdays, 6 to 1 a.m. Okay.
That's it.
There you go. All right, Dennis. Appreciate your time, man.
Hey. Happy to be here, as always.
Need to remind you of the Two Sports Podcast produced here at the Journal. Got a new episode of Prep Rally coming today, High School Sports Podcast with myself and Gene Phelps, doing a webcast of that. And if you miss it, you can watch the replay at djournal.com. And you can also listen for free on iTunes, your podcast app, or at preprally.djournal.com. And on Thursday, new episode of Double Coverage, Ole Miss and Mississippi State Sports Talk with Parrish Alford and Logan Lowry. You can listen to that on iTunes, your podcast app, or at doublecoverage.djournal.com. And now we welcome William Moore, crime reporter, into the show. Hello, William.
Morning.
How's it going?
Everything's going well today.
Great. Good to know. People getting arrested already. Saw the story you posted this morning about the kid who's got his third DUI and he's only 19. That's setting a bad pace.
Yeah, and a bad way to start his week and his year.
Yeah. But anyway, William's on top of things with the crime, and be sure to check out his work at djournal.com. You had a story back on, was it Sunday?
It was Sunday.
Sunday. Had a story about female sex offenders, not something you hear a lot about. And, you look at the numbers that you put in the story, just 3% of the people on the state's sex offender registry for Northeast Mississippi are females. And I'm sure that number is pretty similar wherever you go.
It pretty much across the state and in other states, the number is very low, but you talk to authorities and officials and they say the number of actual offenders is actually much higher. They just have a hard time getting male victims to come forward.
Yeah.
And, even when it goes through the grand jury process, they have a hard time convincing folks that a crime actually occurred.
Right.
Even though, by the letter of the law, a crime did occur, but not everybody's willing to you know, press charges.
Yeah, well, what are a couple of the main reasons that for this?
Well, usually when you have an older woman mm-hmm. and a younger male mm-hmm. victim,
right?
You know, we're still living in there's still people out there with the mindset that, you know, he was a willing participant. You know, it's sort of a rite of passage kind of thing. You know, you know, right. I've heard people tell stories. You know, saying, you know, well, if I would have been that young, you know, I would have been proud to.
Right. That's a typical guy mindset,
It's
I guess.
A typical guy macho mindset. And then on the other hand, when you get ones where maybe he didn't feel that way, you know, he would feel ashamed.
Right.
All right. I was taken advantage of.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't want to come forward. I mean, because we're living in the South. I mean, it's still that whole macho mindset. You know, you're supposed to internalize everything. You don't want to look weak.
Right, right.
And because of that, you know, they don't have victims coming forward. And even when somebody does find out about it, there have been cases, I mean, I've had investigators tell me that, you know, when they went to the grand jury, they presented evidence, here's the evidence, we know it, but the victim would say, you know, well, it did happen, but I don't want you to press charges.
Right.
And then you'll have considerate people on the grand jury that think they're doing the right thing and just won't hand down an indictment.
Or maybe people on the grand jury, a lot of people think this, just think, well, he's a guy. I mean, if it was the other way, obviously the female was taken advantage of or it was just not consensual at all, which if they're underage, consent shouldn't matter. But this is kind of the mindset of, oh, well, you know, the guy, you know.
That's one of the things that sort of chaps, you know, law enforcement, because, I mean, we had one here in Lee County where there was a school teacher, a female school teacher who was having sex with a 16-year-old boy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's against the law in the state.
Yeah, it is.
And she got 4 months in prison and had to write a 1,000-word essay.
Yeah. So the punishment tends to be not as severe.
The punishment's not as bad. And that's what, you know, the sheriff was pointing out. You know, if it had been the other way around, if it had been a 30-year-old male teacher and a 16-year-old female student, you know, he'd still be in parchment.
Right, right. And, you know, it's like, you know, when you're talking about underage people involved, consent shouldn't matter. I mean, maybe the guy, you know, a high school 16-year-old boy in high school, you know, who may think that's, like you said, that's a big deal, that, you know, he's almost proud of it.
That an older woman was paying attention to.
But that shouldn't even factor in. If you're underage, you're underage.
The law is the law.
Right. But for whatever reason, I mean, how do you change that? I don't know.
Well, you can't really change it. I mean, the way the law is written, I mean, it's designed trying to protect folks.
Right.
But it's also trying to leave enough leeway. Because, you know, in Mississippi, the age of consent is 16.
Right.
But you could have a situation where you had two kids in high school.
Right.
Yeah. One could be a senior, one could be a freshman. I mean, do you charge the senior if they were dating and it was consensual?
Yeah. And sometimes they do. I've seen they do. But other times, yeah. I don't know.
You know, it's one of those things where they have to treat each one on a case-by-case basis. But when you're dealing with an adult, taking advantage of someone underage, it should be, it is a crime and charges should be filed.
Right. And it didn't always involve underage people. You gave an example of a couple of college students at a party, and one guy had a little too much to drink, so he went to try to sleep it off, and a female took advantage of him, and he was just too inebriated to defend himself, and he didn't, you know, and believe it or not, sometimes guys don't want it, okay? Believe it
or
not.
Well, it's true. You know, and in this particular case, he didn't want it, but
the point here being, I know this is awkward, everybody, but the point being that I want to drive home here is guys can be taken advantage of, okay?
Correct.
That's the point, okay? It is possible. I know people don't think that, but
That was one of the quotes from the district attorney. There's all a mindset out there among some folks that there's no such thing as a male victim of sexual assault.
And that's a bad mindset.
That's true.
Yeah. But anyway, fascinating story, William. Again, y'all can check that out in Sunday's Journal or at djournal.com. William, appreciate your time.
Glad to be here.
Be sure to watch the Daily Journal's Capitol View webcast each Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Capitol Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison provides commentary and analysis on the issues being debated by Mississippi lawmakers. You can watch live each Monday afternoon about 2 o'clock or catch the replay later in the day. New episodes will be released as long as the legislature is in session. Time now for today's news memo, and for more on these stories, read the Daily Journal or visit djournal.com. The legislature cut funding for the North Mississippi Symphony Orchestra's education program this week, leaving a major hole in the organization's budget. The cuts eliminated about $37,500 for the Link Up program. That program works with local schools to provide music and orchestra education to students. As part of it, the symphony's music director visits schools and provides curriculum to music teachers. Then in February, the students perform publicly alongside the North Mississippi Symphony Orchestra. Symphony Executive Director Lisa Martin said the only funding for the educational program comes from the state.
The Downtown Tupelo Main Street Association and Trustmark Bank will host Wine Downtown from 5 to 8 p.m. on April 28th. More than 10 downtown merchants will participate, and each location will offer a different wine and food pairing. Tickets are $30 and are available for purchase online through Eventbrite or at the DTMSA office at 108 South Broadway. For more information, call 662-841-6598.
A recycling drop-off site on Commerce Street will close this week. Plans to relocate the site are still in the works. Tupelo Public Works Director Chuck Williams said the site proved difficult to efficiently monitor. He said officials plan to move the drop-off site to Tupelo Recycling at 669 Westmoreland Drive. Curbside recycling also will continue on its normal pickup schedule of once every 2 weeks.
A movie by local filmmaker Glenn Payne is now available in stores. Earthrise was distributed digitally last year through iTunes, Amazon Prime, and Google Play. It outperformed many titles on Amazon Prime. This week, it was released at stores like Barnes & Noble, Best Buy, and FYE. The psychological sci-fi thriller depicts the human race colonizing on Mars in the future. Some remaining members of humanity have stayed behind to rehabilitate a dying Earth. Behind-the-scenes footage of Payne's process is available at facebook.com/earthrise.
Local mother Troy Coleman has spent 4 years making plans for a youth mentoring program for school-aged children. Now her vision is becoming a reality. Coleman and two others have started Life-Changing Mentor Development Program to give children more opportunities to learn social, civic, and other skills. It is open to children from all backgrounds. The group of children and adult mentors will meet every weekend and do community service and recreational activities together. Coleman also plans to incorporate educational experiences for the children. The program will host a membership drive on Saturday at North Mississippi Medical Center. For more information, email lifechangingmdp@gmail.com. Need to remind you all about Thrive Marketing, a full-service digital marketing company located in Tupelo, providing websites, search engine optimization, social media management, email, and text messaging services for local businesses online at thrive.ms.
It's Wednesday morning. That means it's food day. And here we are with Gina. That would be Jenna Parsons. Jenna.
Leslie. Welcome. Thank you.
I was excited to see your column today and the breakfast casserole because I'm not a fan of breakfast casseroles for the same reason you wrote about, because I don't like soggy bread.
I don't either. And especially if you make them the night before, which is sort of the way they're designed, is to be made the night before and bake the next morning, and that bread just absorbs and then it's just eggy and yucky. But there's one that we make at the church sometimes for brunch that's got sausage and rice in it, and that one's really good. But this is different because it's got the potatoes. And the original recipe came from Southern Living and did not have the potatoes with the peppers and onions. But I read all the reviews, and they said it's better with peppers and onions. And then somebody said, well, duh, you can buy a bag of diced hash browns in the grocery store that come with peppers and onions, and they're called Potatoes O'Brien. So I brought the Kroger brand.
My mother used to make O'Brien potatoes homemade. She would cook potatoes and cut them up and put the peppers and onions in them.
I think O'Brien potatoes, by definition, just have peppers. But I think along the way we have added onions because, you know, in the South we add onions to everything.
Well, I was curious about your column because I know last week you talked a lot about your vacation, but I was curious because, you know, my family lived in Itabena for a brief time.
I did not know that.
They did. They lived out on Lake Roebuck, which is some little lake in Itabena. They rented a house when Dad worked in Greenwood. And I wondered if, is there a place to eat in Itabena?
If there was, we didn't see it. We drove in on the main road, and the houses were really pretty and little brick cottages and cottages with hip roofs, and all the azaleas were in bloom, and it was so pretty. And, you know, I'd always thought of Itabena as just really poor. And then we got into downtown, and nothing was open. Everything was closed up, boarded up. The post office didn't even look like it had seen a human being. We did see what we believe to be a grocery store that might or might not have still been operating. Huh. But it looks like people live there, but I don't think people shop there. And I have no idea where my mama grew up. I'm sure it was out in the country somewhere because I know they had a lot of land. But we kind of drove through and got all sad and droopy and then headed on to Indianola.
It's kind of a sad little town.
It is.
Even when they lived there, it was kind of a sad little town. So,
but flat, Lord, that was some flat land.
I had a great aunt who lived out from Itabena in a place called Morgan City, except Mildred called it Morgan City. Well, I'm going to try your breakfast casserole without bread.
And they say, the reviewer said it could be made the night before. But even then, I think the potatoes would get soggy with the egg mixture. So I'm just going to make it that morning. It didn't take very long. Cooking the potatoes took the longest. It's good.
Okay, well, I'm going to definitely give it a try. And you went to Pontotoc this week for your Cook of the Week.
I did. For Jennifer, she put me off the first time, but then she broke down and agreed to meet me the second time. And when I got there, there were two men sitting in the office, and she had told me, come to the office and ask for me. And I came in, and there were two men sitting there, and I said, I'm here to see Jennifer McCormick. And they both just looked at me and pointed, and she was sitting over in a chair and stood up. We introduced ourselves, and we went into the next room. And I said, that was kind of odd. And she said, well, they told me they were going to give me a hard time when you got here. And I told them that if they did, they couldn't have any of the peach cobbler or the cake that I made. So they were sitting there like deer in the headlights on the straight and narrow because they wanted some of her food. So they didn't even speak. They just pointed.
Well, did you taste her peach cobbler?
I did not. Some of the guys were having some as I was leaving, but, you know, I'm not a whole lot of on sweets. But everything looked good and smelled good, and she was just, she was really interesting, really crafty, and she talked about how her mom was crafty and sewed, and her grandmother was crafty, and that if she had not inherited the crafty gene, that she would have thought that she had been hatched or adopted, because it would just be impossible to come from that family and not have those interests.
She sounded like she was kind of fun. Some of her
she
quotes
was fun. Has more yarn quite, than Joanne's.
Yeah, that was great. I thought that was really good. Well, my favorite recipe of hers was the chocolate cobbler, just because it intrigues me, because I grew up not knowing that there was such a thing.
I think chocolate cobbler is a Northeast Mississippi thing.
Like
I had
chocolate
never,
gravy.
Never heard of it until I got here. And my friend Mona Beasley makes it, and that's one of her family's favorites. And the first time she told me she was going to make it, I thought, that is disgusting. And it's good. I mean, I'm not a big sweet eater, but it is good. And I'm sure that Jennifer's is good. That's her go-to dish. She has a brother-in-law that told her that if she were coming to a family reunion and she wasn't going to bring that dish, that she might as well just leave.
So, well, I've tasted chocolate cobbler before, and I like it a lot, sadly.
No.
Well, tell me about, I was intrigued also by your main story this week. It was just kind of different from you know, it wasn't a restaurant opening or the ministry, and I just thought it was neat. And when I saw the picture of that poor stove and you talking
eyes.
About how many men he cooks for and how long it takes him, it's, yeah, they definitely need a new one.
They do. By the time he finishes one meal, it's time to start the next meal. So they're hoping that with this new, the gas oven has already been donated, but it's just not in place yet because they've got to get the gas stove, and then they've got a convection oven on hold that they've agreed to pay $1,600 for, but that we call it a vent hood, but the ventilation system is the main thing that they need, and that's going to be $3,000 plus. But yes, it's called Broken Lives Rescue Mission or Broken Lives Ministry, and it's for men who have addiction to drugs or alcohol. And it's a faith-based program, so they pretty much have to come there and turn it over to God. And sometimes they don't make it, and they go off. And when they come back, Greg was telling me, Greg is the guy that cooks for them. When the guys come back after a bender, he'll say, "Well, did you have fun? I hope you had fun." And they'll say, "No, it wasn't any fun, you know, because we knew we were doing wrong this time."
Now, the guy who cooks was a resident there before?
Yes, you have to have been through the program or have a family member that's been through the program. And Greg was an alcoholic, and he says he's an alcoholic. One of the other guys there says he was just a drunk because he said he could go 6 or 7 months without a taste of alcohol. But then once he got onto it, it was there. That's all he thought about. And it was he said, never drank less than 100 proof alcohol. He said, you'd never see me drink a beer.
Wow.
Because it would take too many to get him drunk. So he hit rock bottom, as I guess they all do. And fortunately, there's this place for them to go. There is not one. I asked if they thought of having one for women, and they said that there is a place somewhere in Northeast Mississippi that provides the same service for women, but it would just, I mean, there's just no way they could house men and women and do what they do. But hopefully someone else can start a place for women, because there are just as many women that need this help as there are men.
And he said it takes him how long to cook breakfast?
It takes him 4 hours to cook dinner.
Dinner.
For breakfast, I've forgotten how many. He told me he cooks like 4 dozen eggs. I mean, it's just an amazing amount of food. But they're having a bake sale on the 30th, on a Saturday, at Jim Garrison's car lot to raise money for the Vina Hood and for the convection oven. And so you can go there and buy cakes and pies and brownies and cookies. And there's also a yard sale in conjunction with it. But every penny that they raise will go back, hopefully, to buy everything they need for the kitchen. And if they were to raise more than what they need for that, then it would go back into the day-to-day operations of the ministry. But this is a really great group of guys, and they've got their hearts in the right place.
And the bake sale is next Saturday,
April the 30th. I think, what do I have there?
From 7 a.m. to 4 p.m.
That's the bake sale and the yard sale.
And Jim Garrison's car lot is on Auburn Road.
On Auburn Road. I'm not familiar with where it is, but I'm sure most people know where it is. And cash or checks only. They will not be taking credit cards. And I have to say that Auburn Baptist Church is the one that started with this idea, but then Brewer Baptist Church and Brewer United Methodist Church got on board as well. And so those are the three churches that are providing all the baked goods, and there won't be anything frozen, no frozen casseroles. This isn't like a holiday bazaar. This is strictly fresh baked goods that they'll be having.
That sounds good, and for a good cause.
And they gave us some good recipes, too, for those cakes.
Cool. Well, thank you, Jenna. I did want to say, when listening to last week's podcast, I also wish I had been in here so I could have jumped to the defense of asparagus.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
I did hear that Chris likes it, but these two were giving you some, a bunch of...
The more I sit in here and talk with Brad and Derek, the more I find that they are really picky eaters, and I am glad I am not their mama.
Well, yeah.
For multiple reasons.
I just didn't know anyone would be against asparagus. I mean, I could see you being neutral, but, like, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like something that you would hate.
Well, I did hear Derek at the end say if you cooked it, he would try it. He would eat it.
And which president was it that had the aversion to, was it Brussels?
Broccoli. Was it broccoli?
Was it George W. Bush?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, I didn't eat asparagus as a child. I hated it. But the only asparagus I had was the canned slimy stuff.
That's gray by the time
and my
it
mother
comes
made
out of
this.
Did it
and
have
it had
boiled
eggs on top and English peas. It was just
nasty.
But then when I was introduced as an adult to fresh asparagus, it changed my whole world view of asparagus.
That's the same way with me with salmon. I grew up with my mother making salmon croquettes, which I didn't care for. But once I found out about salmon fillets and salmon steaks and how when you actually cook it and it flakes and it's moist and succulent, and now I want salmon and we're having catfish for dinner. But, yeah, I changed my mind. Fresh just makes a difference. Yeah. It really does.
Well, I hope that those two boys will, men, will someday open up their hearts to and minds and embrace asparagus, or at least try it.
But they need to try it in the spring when it's in season.
They do, and I was going to say their pickiness isn't just for food. You should try being in here with them all the time.
They're picky about their politicians.
Well,
they've got opinions.
Everybody does.
Prima donnas.
Just like a belly button, they say.
Well, that's not what I was going to say.
I know, but you know.
Family newspaper.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you, Jenna.
Thank you, Leslie.
Well, Leslie, I guess that's it for this show. Mm. Pretty much, unless we just want to keep talking. Sometimes Derek and I just do that. We'll just talk.
It ends so quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And we just won't shut up and, you know, it's okay.
What you want to talk about?
I don't know. Oh, Chris is giving us the cut sign. Got to go, everybody.
No, I'm not giving y'all the cut sign. I'm saying sometimes that's what I have to do with you and Derek.
Yeah, that's true. Just ramble on sometimes. I know people are probably sick of hearing about the play I was in. Yeah, and this is where everybody turns off the podcast. No, but I wanted to mention that you, and we didn't talk about this enough, you were in a play for the first time.
I was.
We both have made our stage debuts within the last month or two.
Yeah.
And you, but you had like a lead role, the lead role. I was just a little minor supporting character.
I don't know. You were pretty good. Yeah, I think your role was substantial. I saw it, and I thought you were a great, you know, with that smarmy mustache.
The smarmy mustache.
You were a great bad guy.
No, well, I had
sure. That dog on a chain over there.
Who's that dog on the chain? Is that what it was? Was I in my Van Bellinger voice too much when I had the mustache? Maybe, I was talking like this.
I think that's it. Now you're kind of back to your...
Back to my...
And you really seem to be enjoying that, chewing on that cigar or whatever.
Dude, by the end of each night, that thing was just...
I bet.
A soggy, gross mess.
I bet.
Yeah. But, no, I had a lot of fun. It was very educational, which I'm sure for you it was...
Yeah.
You learn a lot about... What goes into it?
Absolutely.
Okay, what did y'all learn? What surprised you the most, maybe, about acting?
Well, I'll tell you what. One of the toughest parts was what they call the blocking, which is where you're supposed to be on stage at certain moments, and making sure also that you don't turn your back to the audience, which was a thing I had to work through. Hmm. I kept would not have myself positioned correctly. Really, learning the lines was one of the easier things for me. Of course, I didn't have a ton of them. Now, Leslie, I'm sure you had a bunch of lines.
Yeah, that was kind of scary, daunting to me, because I am, like Joe Haynes, I am an older person. I didn't know, I mean, I used to be great at memorization, but, you know, that was when I was in high school, and that's been a long time ago. But there was a lot of lines to learn, and I thought I would never get them memorized. But
yeah. Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm not good at memorizing either, but it's just like one week everything just kind of clicked into place, and you think you're never going to get it, then all of a sudden you're on stage and it just kind of comes naturally.
You said something, Brad, on the podcast that I thought was interesting, that on a past podcast, I mean, and I'm wondering, Leslie, if you had the same experience too. As someone who hasn't acted in a play, I would have thought the hardest part would be memorizing your lines, and you know, other than having to memorize... For English classes, we might have to memorize a Shakespearean monologue, and that would be the most that I've had doing. That was hard, and that's just one speech. That's why I would have always thought that'd be the hardest part. But I remember you saying that harder than memorizing the lines is memorizing all the cues right before your lines, everybody else's lines. I would have just thought memorize your own. That's all you have to do. But do you almost have to know the whole play, or at least
you don't
for the
have
scenes
to know the whole
in?
Play? But with the scenes you're in, you have to know. You don't have to know everybody's lines per se, but you once you do it a few times, you get an idea of, you know, you're kind of in the scene, so to speak, so you're not having to sit there and necessarily wait for the cue, but you are listening for certain phrases or keywords, but also just the way the flow of the conversations, you kind of know where your lines are supposed to fit in.
And that's why it's so crucial for everybody to know their lines, because, you know, you're waiting for the cue to say your line, and if somebody... You know, just completely doesn't give you the cue. It's like,
And there were a couple of times, and I don't know, I forget now which nights We had five performances. There was a line that I almost dropped a couple of times when I'm sitting at the bar, which would have messed things up because John McHouston, I was having a conversation with his character, and he's just amazing, by the way.
He was good.
Yeah, he played Jericho Walker, the drunk newspaper man. Accurate portrayal.
I wouldn't know.
I paused a little too long, and I realized, oh, crap, I got a line right here. And it is weird because you know the line so well, but maybe it was a lack of focus or something, or just nerves. I don't know. But I didn't pause too long. I don't think anybody caught it. But if I had dropped that line completely, that would have thrown everything off. Now there was a time I did actually drop a line a couple of times, but it was one of those that it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And the next line was not dependent on me saying that one. So it was like they say, the audience doesn't have a script. It was not a crucial line.
Well, one night at rehearsal, thank goodness it was rehearsal, I did forget a line, and it was an important line. And we were off book, and nobody was, you could sit there and squirm as much as you wanted, but nobody was going to toss you your line. We were past that point.
Yeah.
And thankfully, after about probably 2 full minutes of silence and me thinking, oh, my gosh, I don't know what I'm supposed to say, one of my co-actors, a kid from high school who knew what I was supposed to say, said something
that
kind of was his line. It was his line that was to follow mine, but he said it in a way that it would make me know what I was supposed to say. So a lot of times we kind of saved each other.
Yeah, and that's a big key, just kind of being able to help each other out on stage if things don't go quite like they're supposed to.
Yeah.
I thought we did a pretty good job of that. I mean, I was not in but 2 of the 4 scenes, so there was, I didn't have as much opportunity to screw up, thank goodness.
And you talked about the blocking. For me, in this play, which was A Higher Place in Heaven, we watched others get frustrated with their blocking instructions, but Tanya Smith, who was Miss Simpson, and I sat in a rocking chair pretty much the entire time. So we would pretty always easy. Just look at each other and smile and say, aren't you glad we just get to sit here?
Yeah. And in Peacemakers, we had a lot of action,
yeah,
including the shootout at the end, which on the last night, the last show, we had these really nice prop guns with blanks in them. But for whatever reason, when I shoot the sheriff, my gun did not go off. And I think his didn't go off one time when he tried to shoot me. So you just kind of have to act like you got shot anyway. And at that point, there was so much gunfire, maybe no one noticed. But you're like, I fired and just click. And then I get stabbed.
Did you get nervous? Were you nervous at all?
A little bit, but not as much as I thought I'd be. Like right before you go out.
Yeah.
But once you're on stage, at least for me, I did notice my hands shaking a little bit a couple of times.
Something about,
I tend
to
be kind of nervy.
I mean, I'm shy, and I've tried to get out of that, but I have found when you're on stage with other people, it's not as scary as, if I had been out there by myself to do something.
Oh, gosh, like John McHouston had that big monologue before I would have, I don't know if I could have done that. But anyway, it was fun. I'm going to do it again soon.
My next question is, kind of what are y'all's thoughts about future acting roles?
Yeah, if time permits, and I hope you do too, because I didn't get a chance to see your play. I feel bad about it. It was one of those things.
I'd like to do something again, but I will be sure to choose something that – or audition for something that does not have so many lines. I didn't know going in, because I didn't see a script. I just, they handed me a piece of paper and I read. So until I had been given the role, that was the only, and I got my script, it was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. I still need to go through the audition process because I didn't for this one. They were already a few weeks into rehearsing and they needed a Van Bellinger and a guy that was in the production, Trey Simpson. I know him from past actors' workshops that we've done together. He contacted me. He's like, hey, you want to be in this? I was like, sure.
Well, that's how, when I was in To Kill a Mockingbird, that's how it worked for me. Some lady dropped out of the role of Miss DuBose, and so I got a call, and they said, would you do Miss DuBose? And so I said, I guess so, because it was, I love the show, and I love the book, and I knew the role anyway, so I did it. And
nice.
So auditioning is, that's the worst part for me, having to go and audition, and I almost didn't do it.
So this is actually not your first play.
No, it's
technically
it's your first lead.
One that I've ever auditioned for.
Okay,
it's the biggest thing I've ever done.
Yeah,
right. Okay, Cool.
You talk about the audition. It reminds me of a story when Tom Booth was here on the show, and you know, he was kind of telling the story of how he got into community theater, and I don't remember what play, but he was auditioning for a play. There were a lot of people, and something, the fact that he almost left, he said, because maybe it was just taking too long to get to him or something, and then somebody stopped him in the hallway and said, "I hope you're not about to leave, because we would like to have you in here," and ended up getting the role and ended up becoming, you know, whatever, executive director of community theater. So I guess I tell that to say, sounds like auditioning for anybody is
they're tough.
It's difficult.
Yeah.
But yeah, do it, because if you want to, because it's a fun experience. I had a ball. But
it's fun.
Anyway, I guess we'll wrap it up now before Chris gives us the throat slash again.
Y'all are good.
You can reach us on Twitter at DJournalMemo. You can also drop us an email, memo@journalinc.com. You can listen, of course, for free on iTunes, your podcast app, or at memo.djournal.com. Tell your friends. Follow The Daily Journal on Twitter at DJournalNow. I'm on Twitter at Bradlock. Chris is on Twitter at Chris Kiefer. Leslie's not on Twitter, I don't think.
Yes, she is. Actually, now. I am.
Oh, that's right.
You
are. I don't follow you, I don't think.
Well, because I don't really do much on there, because Derek put me on there, and then he didn't instruct me very well, so I told him I needed more. But I think it's at Lily Chris.
You think?
I think that's what we did.
L-E-L-E?
L-E-E-L-E-E. Chris, I'm not sure why we did that. I think
that was the last
time
you hosted. Is when he did it, maybe, because he wanted to tease to your Twitter handle or something.
Yeah.
You need to get on there and impart your wisdom to the Twitter world.
Well,
because there's a lot of non-wisdom out
there. Oh, you know, speaking of, and I don't mean to take us on another side, but speaking of your wisdom, and I told you this the other day, but I really enjoyed your column.
Just
you can't do that.
What? I'm the producer now. Sorry. Anyway,
no, but I enjoyed your column on Sunday, and I know I mentioned that to you, but it was about Garrison Keillor, and you know, I guess I was thinking, you know, Leslie's wisdom you can get every Sunday in the living section in her columns,
you're kind.
And the Daily Journal, but I'm a big Garrison Keillor fan. My wife and I both are, and you know, we've talked about how much we're going to miss him when he's off the air, and I just enjoyed the way you wrote about that on Sunday.
I liked it too. We used to listen to him when I was a kid growing up, when we'd travel. So
he's done it for a long time.
Yes,
I guess he deserves to retire, but I hate it.
Yeah. And at least there's a lot of archives. I mean, there's a lot of shows I haven't heard, and I've gotten that for Christmas before. They've got the seasons of Tales of Lake Wobegon and all kind of things. So I know there will be plenty of ways to still listen to him after he's off the air.
Absolutely. Cool. And he's given this new guy, Chris Thile, I think is his name. He's given him a good, you know, Keillor says he'll do a good job, so we'll give him a chance.
Yeah, the storytelling, he's such a good good storyteller.
All right, well, that's it for this show. We'll be back tomorrow. Derek Russell, I guess, he's off the podcast. Sorry, no Derek for y'all tomorrow. No, I guess we'll let him try
back. We'll see how he is.
Make him audition.
Yeah, we'll make him audition for the podcast. All right, that's it for today. Be back tomorrow. See you then.